see a darkness, and that I see a darkness, and that I see a darkness, and that I see a darkness.
Hello and welcome to the March 2009 edition of I Hear a New World. We've got extracts from an interview I did with Will Oldham, aka Bonnie Prince Billy, for this month's Skinny magazine, and we've got tracks by Jeffrey Lewis, The Japanese War Effort, Wake the President, and Found. And I asked Will Oldham what he thought of the track Williamsburg, Will Oldham Horror by Jeffrey Lewis, in which at the end, Will Oldham, basically the character that Jeffrey Lewis is singing about of Will Oldham, attacks him and does some horrible things to him. And amazingly, he liked it. So let's hear what he thought, just quickly, and then we'll play the song for you.
I was thinking about the kind of links you've got with other musicians, and obviously the Johnny Cash cover and you working with him. You've worked with Björk and recorded a song for Drawing Restraint 9 soundtrack with her. And then you've got people like young upstarts, kind of like Jeffrey Lewis, writing songs about you. I don't know if you're aware of that one.
Yeah, I like that song.
Did you like it, yeah?
Yeah, I thought it was a great song.
Today I went to Major Math to remaster my old album, and on the L train in the morning I was pretty sure I saw Will Oldham. He was wearing the same sunglasses he had on stage at the Bowery Ballroom. Had he come to walk among the Williamsburgers of his kingdom, and like the burghers of Calais, will a sacrifice be demanded to offer up our dreams and beg for mercy empty-handed? And hapless in our hipness, crowded 5-2 in apartment, relegate our dreams to hobbies and deny our disappointment, 'cause the Stones in 65 want total satisfaction, kid. But the Stones in 69 see grace in just getting what you need. But if that's a victory, then I'd hate to see what I'd look like defeated, 'cause I know there are those who walk among us who seem to get their dreams unimpeded. Like today when I went to Major Math to remaster my old album, on the L train in the morning I was really sure I saw Will Oldham. He was wearing the same sunglasses he had on stage at the Bowery Ballroom. Had he come to walk among the Williamsburgers of his kingdom, you might say, now there's a guy who seems to have the world laid out before him. Or you might say he's just a rich kid or a fascist or a charlatan. But either way you say it, if you look at indie rock culture, you really can't ignore him. And even if at first dismissive, after some listens you'll enjoy him. I was thinking this on the L train, intent on bursting my own bubble. How long should an artist struggle before it isn't worth the hassle? And admit we aren't fit to be the ones inside the castle. This quest for greatness, or at least hipness, just a scam and too much trouble. But then what makes one human being worthy of an easy ride? Born to be a natural artist, you love or hate but can't deny. While us minions in our millions tumble into history's chasm, we might have a couple laughs, but we're still wastes of protoplasm. Like today, I was gonna waste some time and money to remaster some dumb old album, and on the L train in the morning, I was really sure I saw Will Oldham. He was wearing the same big sunglasses he had on stage at the Bowery Ballroom. Had he come to see the strife here in the gutters of his kingdom, where us noble starving artists are striving hard to feed our egos. Our mothers like our music, and our friends come see our shows. And if our friends become successful, we'll consider them our foes. Go home to our four roommates after paying big bucks for rock star shows. What a nightmare, what a horror. I don't want no part of this. Just get me off this crazy ride. I'm gonna puke, I'm gonna piss. I'd rather kill myself. I'd rather just relax or not exist. But you say you want to do an email interview. Oh, what the heck, I can't resist. Hey, Mom, guess what? Today I did another magazine interview. Honey, that's great, you're really famous. Yeah, and I'm 27 too. I kind of thought I was gonna grow up to do stuff that would benefit humanity. But it's getting harder to tell if this artist's life is even benefiting me. 'Cause today I was gonna waste some time and money to remaster some dumb old album, and on the L train in the morning I was totally sure I saw Will Oldham. He was wearing the same big rock star sunglasses he had on stage at the Bowery Ballroom. And since I was feeling in need of answers, I just went right up and asked him. I said, Will, buying Prince Palace, whatever, what do you think about it? Is it worth being an artist or an indie rock star? Are you better off without it? 'Cause you know, maybe the world would be better if we were all just uncreative drones. No dead childhood dreams to haunt us, a decent job, a decent home. And if we had some extra time, we could do real things to promote peace. Become scientists or history teachers or uncorrupt police at least. Come on, Will, you gotta tell me. I grabbed and shook him by the arm. The L train was leaving Bedford with 10,000 white 20-somethings crowded on. He opened his mouth to speak, but it was lost in the rumbling of the wheels. We were thrown together in a corner, and I yelled, tell me, man, for real. You're living comfortably, I assume, even if you're not quite a household name. You've reached a pretty high level of success and critical acclaim. And the L train got the First Avenue, and a bunch of people piled out. I was staring into his sunglasses, and I was really freaking out. I was like, Steamboat Willie, Bonnie Prince of all this shit. You're like the king of a certain genre, but even you must want to quit. Like if you hear a record by Bob Dylan or Neil Young or whatever, you must start thinking, yeah, people like me, but I won't be that good ever. And then I'm sure the thing is probably like Dylan himself too. Stayed up some nights wishing he was as good as Ginsberg or Camus, and he was like, dude, I'm such a faker, I'm just a clown who entertains. And these fools who pay for my crap, they just have pathetic puny brains. And then Camus probably wished it was Milton too, or whatever, you know what I'm saying? So will you be straight with me now that it's just us two on this train? Because I was gonna spend some time and money today to remaster some dumb old album, and I saw you here on the L train, and I was like, hey, is that Bill Oldman? He must at least have some perspective, because it's like living in this town. I get so confused and wound up and uptight, and I just don't know up and down. And then we reached the last stop, and the subway was deserted. It was a long moment of silence, and I let go of his shirt. I started to think that maybe I'd made some kind of big mistake. I tried to walk out onto the platform, but by then it was too late. His sunglasses seemed to grow darker, and still he hadn't even spoke. He just came right up behind me and put his hands around my throat, and threw me down onto the concrete and kicked my face in with his boot, and dragged me down onto the train tracks and tied my hands back with his coat. And I was slipping out of consciousness as he was slipping down my jeans, and he was punching me and humping me, and I slipped off into a dream. So it might have just been a delusion, but I thought I heard him say something like, artists are pussies, and he clung back up and ran away. So I lay there in the darkness on the train tracks, cold and broken. The hours passed, and I thought, well, maybe I won't remaster that old album. And then I started thinking, well, maybe it really wasn't even Will Oldman, even though he did hold my arms and fuck me, just like Will sings in A Sucker's Evening. But whether it was him or wasn't, I couldn't forget the words he'd spoken. Artists are pussies, like we're wusses, or we end up getting fucked. And other kinds of folks are dicks, tall, smart, and strong, and born to fuck us up. I know it sounds really sexist and stupid, it's a terrible analogy, but at that moment on the train tracks, it made a lot of sense to me. Maybe it's just some kind of natural balance, like two types of mental gender that's going on in all societies in one form or another. Like some dicks were born to conquer, I probably would if I could, but if I'm just a pussy, that's okay, cause in a few months maybe I'll put out something good.
And that was the brilliant Jeffrey Lewis with Williamsburg Will Oldham Horror. And he's had the seal of approval from Will himself there, as you heard. Now, he's a brilliant songwriter, Jeffrey Lewis. He's got that song. Songs like Chelsea Hotel Oral Sex Song, which references Leonard Cohen's Chelsea Hotel Number 2. You'll know if you've heard it why it has that title. And basically, his covers, his last album was entirely made of covers of Crass songs, called 12 Crass Songs, and it's absolutely brilliant. And even if you're not a fan of Crass, I think you'll get a lot of enjoyment out of that. I absolutely love it. And he's got a new album coming out in April, so look out for that, and it should be featured in The Skinny next month. Now, what else can I tell you about Jeffrey Lewis? He's also a cartoonist, and his comic Fuff, I actually bought a copy of the first issue when he was playing in Edinburgh recently. He played a gig with Withered Hand, who's been featured on this podcast before. Stanley Brinks, aka Andre Herman June, who's also been featured on this podcast before. And who else was at that gig? It was so good, I can't remember. Oh yeah, funnily enough, who was featured on our last one? Ish Marquez, yeah. So every one of that gig has now been featured on the podcast. And there's another New York kind of rock band, not so much anti-folk, but a rock band called Schwervon. They're coming over to play in Edinburgh this month also, with Withered Hand. Again, funnily enough, this guy is everywhere. You'll see an interview with him in the Skinny magazine this month. Now, if you just give me a second to rustle my papers. This is probably going to become a habit because I don't even have room to lay out all this information in front of me. Let me tell you about the Schwervon gig quickly. Right, they're actually playing in Glasgow, also in at Stereo, on the 24th of March, and that's with John B. McKenna and or Mona Gannon, so I don't know whether both of them will turn up, but and on the 25th at the Bowery, Edinburgh's best new venue, and that's with Come In Tokyo and Withered Hand. So there you go.
I Hear a New World, in conversation with Will Oldham.
Okay, now the tour that Bonnie Prince Billy's doing this year is quite a small one, and he's not able to come to Scotland, but he has been here plenty of times before, and he told me just briefly just how kind of close he feels to Scotland.
Scotland is one of the places away out of the United States that I've probably visited more often than almost any other place since I was 12 or so. Sure. And it's a place that I have a group, you know, strong connections with, musically and through friends that I've made over the last 25 years or so.
Great.
We just did that, you know, we put that Scottish Live record out and did our Scottish Council for the Arts tour of.
That's right. Yeah, of course.
The ins and outs.
Yeah, and obviously you did the Ohio Riverboat song was a kind of an update, wasn't it, of a Scottish folk song?
Exactly, yeah. Loch Tay boat song.
Yeah, great.
And just the last thing that I've actually recorded is singing a duet with this woman Nuala Kennedy, who used to be in Harum Scarum. She's Irish, but she's been a Scottish-based trad musician, I think, for many years now.
So there you go, Will Oldham again, and just on his kind of connections with Scotland, and whilst it is the kind of thing you expect artists to say, you know, oh yeah, I love Scotland and all that, I think in this case he was being really genuine about that. In fact, he's the kind of person who is just genuine about everything, whether or not it's going to offend or annoy you or not. But a very, very nice chap to chat to. And I'm going to have a much more extensive extract coming up soon. This is just a couple of teasers we've had so far. But first of all, let's go back to the music that we feature every month, and the next three tracks are in fact Scottish acts. Let's start with the Japanese War Effort. He's based in Scotland, and he goes under the name of Martin Moog, but even that isn't his real name, so let's just keep the mystery about him there, shall we? This is from his Snowbird, which came out on tape cassette. He played a small open mic kind of set at the Songbito Christmas party, and he was absolutely superb, and I thought he was a lovely guitarist, and his lyrics are quite amusing, and just he's an amusing kind of persona, actually, the way he is on stage. But he also did at a gig put on by Trampoline, who are local promoters. He basically did a kind of loop set where he used a loop pedal and loads of other kind of weird little instruments, and there's a few artists like that, obviously, but he did it very well, and I think it just shows there's a huge variety of what he's capable of, and he's quite experimental. So anyway, this is a more guitar based one, but look out for his new record, King of Poland. It's out on Fabricant Records this month, but we should have something about that in next month's Skinny. So let's fire into this. It is called Punk Is Not Dead, and it's the Japanese War Effort.
Spits on your window.
anything, I want to, you know, continue to make records and continue to work with all the different people that I get to work with. You know, mm-hmm. that's what I want to do. And I don't really, you know, I don't really want to do any of the other stuff. You know, I don't want to do photo sessions. I don't necessarily want to do, I don't want to do extensive press. I don't want to do a lot of the things that are a part of. And it, but I also, but in order to, you know, I love, you know, I love music. I love records. I love popular music, you know, popular music from throughout our knowledge of music history. I like, I love the idea of popular music and how people relate to it. And I understand that, in order to, you know, in order to do what I want to do, I don't want to do it from too much of a distance. And I understand that there's things like, you know, faces and names that help people connect with music. Mm. And so if that has to happen, then there can be some sort of representation of a human being, you know, so it's these photographs and whatever. Yeah. And I know that that's a good thing, because I know that I, you know, to me, I like oftentimes, you know, looking at pictures, or, you know, these days looking at YouTube videos of musicians that I love, you know, from now to since video and film started. Sure. Whatever you can find. And so I understand that desire and how it can enrich the experience of listening to music. But
definitely.
I also know that I'm satisfied with the littlest thing. You know, if I love a song by, you know, the Greek singer Demis Roussos,
right.
if I can go on YouTube and watch some strange video that I can't make heads or tails of, and just looks bizarre and kind of ridiculous and frightening, and it's 3 minutes, and I'm satisfied.
Sure, and it becomes more precious because of the scarcity of it, maybe, as well.
It becomes more precious, or it also means that, you know, the resources that I have to use for appreciating that music have to come more from myself, and that's fine, and that gives me, you know, that gives me a chance to actually expand my listening experience by not, you know, I think another reason why, you know, people can get tired out, and the musician can get tired out, you know, when you give the extreme, you know, pinnacle example of somebody like Michael Jackson or Britney Spears, who we find out so much about them and see them so often that both us and them get, you know, a level of fatigue.
Mm.
And it's just, you know, and if Britney Spears just released music and you didn't ever have to deal with her personality, then you might every once in a while be like, oh, I want to listen to that Britney Spears music.
So, you know, are you a fan yourself?
No, I don't really like Britney Spears. I'm just using her as a, actually.
I was hoping really, you did that for a minute. Okay.
I like, I mean, it doesn't mean I don't like, you know, whatever, radio pop, but I've always been kind of mystified and even offended by people's claims that, you know, Britney Spears is sort of like the Oasis of America. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. I don't understand how somebody who likes music can, you know, look you in the eye with a straight face and say that this is good.
Okay. But like R. Kelly, though, you do like.
What's that?
You do like R. Kelly, though, I believe.
Exactly, yeah, I like R. Kelly.
Yeah, okay, we'll not argue on that one. Okay.
No.
Just a couple of short...
originality going for him.
Right, originality, okay.
Long to be
Wake the President there, and that is Miss Tierney, and that's from their new album called You Can't Change That Boy on Electric Honey Records. Now that's the label that's run by Stowe College students themselves, and previous bands that they've released are Bell and Sebastian, Snow Patrol and Bliffy Clyro. So Wake the President are in great company there, and I think they deserve to be, because that's not only is that a brilliant song, but the whole album is the same standard. And I think guitar wise there's definitely the Bell and Sebastian Orange Juice felt, and even Johnny Marr, I think you could mention there. I think really superb, and lyrically as well, excellent. Great songwriting there. So basically check them out. In fact, if you listen to this on Friday when this should go live on the Skinny's website, their album launch is tonight, so drop everything you're doing and get down to Pollock Shields Burg Hall to see them there. If you're in London, you can see them at the brilliantly titled Twee as Fuck evening in the Buffalo Bar, London. But make sure you do. And they also they run a small label themselves called Stay Dirty Records, which has Endor and Zooey Van Gooey on it, who are also excellent artists. So basically, the last band is found. This is Let Fidelity Break, and they're a great Edinburgh band. They're also signed to Fence Records. And speaking of gigs, Fence Records has something on tomorrow. That's Saturday. I realise you might be listening to it after this, and I apologise if so, but they have a home game, pre-season friendly as they call it, and the home game festival itself is on the 17th, 18th and 19th, I believe it is, yes it is indeed, of April this year. You can still get tickets on their website, fencerecords.com, and I believe Found will make an appearance at that. And also the pre-season friendlies are on, as I said, tomorrow, that's Saturday, the March the 7th, and that's at Old St Paul's Church Hall, from 2 to 8 p.m. loads of people playing at that, loads of Fence people. And the next one is at Anstruther on Sunday, March the 22nd, between 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. at the Hugh Scott Hall. So if you're in that area, make sure you get down there, because it's always a great atmosphere with Fence gigs, and there's loads of brilliant artists on the label.
I haven't seen you in a long time. Hope you're alright, hope you're still fine, hope you're still a friend of mine. How many years has it been since we were something? Doesn't really matter, cause it never came out in the rinse.
Drink!
World, in conversation with Will Oldham.
Okay, I won't keep you much longer. I just wanted to mention the your cover of Puff the Magic Dragon for the Songs for the Young of Heart compilation, which was compiled by the Tindersticks. Now, I love that song, and I had it on a children's tape, you know, when I was a kid myself.
Yeah.
It really touched me at the time because it was so sad. I mean,
yeah.
Is that one of the reasons you chose that in particular?
I think, I'm trying to remember, I think it was Stuart from the Tindersticks who approached me and said, would you be interested in recording Puff the Magic Dragon? And but I had the same, you know, or similar relationship that you have had to that song. And so it was really kind of a no-brainer to just, you know, like, it's a song, yeah, that I've sung countless times over my entire life and listened to countless more times over my entire life, and that, yeah, is a deeply affecting song. And so having the chance to sing it, you know, with their musical backing was, you know, it was really cool.
Yeah, and that kind of ties in with your popular song thing, because, you know, children's songs, I mean, people get hooked on them early, and it becomes such a big thing, doesn't it? So
it does, especially. And then, you know, the cool thing about a song like Puff the Magic Dragon is you get so into it as a kid, and then as an adult you hear it and you're like, wow, that's still a good song.
Right enough, yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of songs I think that we listen to as kids that would not hold up to our adult listening ears, but for some reason that one does.
True. That was the wonderful Will Oldham there talking about his version of Puff the Magic Dragon. And there are other extracts from him, well, not extracts, but there are other quotes and interesting points from him in the interview in the Skinny magazine and on the website, theskinny.co.uk. Thank you very much for having a listen to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed all the music included. And there is one last gig plug that I want to mention. On the 7th of March, again, on Saturday, it's at the Wee Red Bar in Edinburgh, and it's the Foundling Wheel versus Dead Boy Robotics versus Enfant Bastard, who we've had on the show, the last artist. Now, they're all part of the Bear Scotland Collective, but the interesting thing about this gig is they're all playing on stage at the same time. I don't know if this is a good idea or if it'll work, but, you know, it's an original idea, that's for sure. So if you're around, check that out, because it is something that probably hasn't ever been done anywhere else, I think. So anyway, then we're all about originality here in New World. So thanks again for listening. Please subscribe on iTunes, and thank you. it feels to me anyway, from speaking to you, that that's an important thing to, you know, protecting your lifestyle and your way of life, you know. And you said about making the deal with the record company so that you could basically have a bit of peace and quiet in a way over one of the albums and just let it be natural.
Yeah.
So is that something that you really feel strongly about then, protecting that?
I feel strongly about protecting my, you know, ability and enthusiasm and energy and desire to continue making music.
Sure.
And it seems like there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of, as with in every walk of life, I feel pretty certain, you know, there are a lot of forces constantly acting against you to make you feel like it might be better and easier to stop or to find a way of, you know, deflating or destroying all the things that made something that, you know, something that was important to you once not important anymore because it just seems so unrelated to what you care about.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it's just a regular checks and balance system trying to, you know, when things do seem, you know, stupid or futile or,
yeah,
or wrong, you know, to not feel necessarily like get claustrophobic about something like that, but to feel like, okay, that just means turn left or that means turn right. It doesn't just mean, you know, where you were hoping to just keep moving forward. Mm-hmm. That's not always the best way to go.
Right. Okay. Well, that kind of sums up in a way, you know, the way you have recorded, because each album has gone different. I mean, when you started, obviously you went under several different names and you still do now and again. So that, I take it that in a way that kind of sums up your philosophy is how you deal with things, which sounds...
Yeah. Not to necessarily feel like if you're not moving straight, doesn't mean you're not progressing.